Hello there. Today's Monday, November 18th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a very big week expected in the ongoing public impeachment hearings into the president's actions. Violent clashes in Hong Kong over the weekend get worse.
For the kind of things they're dealing with, it's really remarkable that no one has been killed, really.
Also ahead, singer Billie Eilish is out with a new emotional song dedicated to her brother. It's all on today's International Edition. Hong Kong police stormed the university today or Sunday and held by anti-government protesters early Monday after an all-night siege. Fiery explosions were seen on the campus as police moved in just before dawn. Student protesters have been barricading themselves at universities across Hong Kong, stockpiling makeshift weapons and turning campuses into what look like war zones. It marks a dangerous new phase in Hong Kong's five-month-old anti-government protests.
The protesters are teenagers, and they believe they are fighting for something, and I personally think this is my last for a longer time.
For such a small city, trying to fight against an authoritarian regime, so we need international support, which properly can explain why in the past 4 days protesters in Hong Kong insist to have a stronger say and would like to have more severe actions.
A special tactical team was called in Monday to move on the campus. Dozens of protesters were arrested, and a live news feed showed a police vehicle and a university gate engulfed in flames. And not all who have seen these protests say they're worthwhile. Steve Vickers is the former head of the Royal Hong Kong Criminal Intelligence Bureau.
Demanding five things, or we will burn down your railway stations on a regular basis, you know, is not going to end happily anywhere in the world. This movement has come off the rails and is really out of control. And the violent element of it, or the sharp end of it, are destroying the message that the rest of them had established through large demonstrations, which were peaceful.
VOA's Bill Gallo went behind the scenes at one campus where students say they've been had been preparing for the worst, and I got a chance to speak with them earlier about it. Bill, what have you been seeing?
Well, the latest is that there appeared to have been a concerted effort by at least some of the students to leave after the sun rose here at the Hong Kong Polytechnic University. I saw maybe hundreds of student protesters fleeing in a line out of the university. They were met with tear gas, a lot of tear gas. It's not clear how many were arrested, but I've at least seen dozens who were tied up with wire ties and sat on the ground on a sidewalk outside the university. They were later sort of marched in front of reporters towards waiting vans. It's not clear what charges they were arrested on. Last night, however, they were making arrests on riot-related charges.
Are you seeing any violence?
Well, there's just sort of a sporadic waves of violence, I would say. I mean, whenever students decide to leave, they're surrounded, so they're met by police, and there is inevitably tear gas, sometimes water cannons. There is a hardcore, I guess you could call them, group of protesters who have remained inside the campus. There are some reporters, including VOA Mandarin service reporters, who are there with them, I believe, at this point still, and they have no intention, it seems, to go. They've been surrounded for over a day now, and they've been barricaded in at this university, at least some of those student protesters, for probably, I would say, a good 7 days at this point.
And I know besides the area that you're in, which is a little iffy at the moment, there are other areas within these protests at the universities that have really been literally on fire.
Yeah, some of the scenes you see are quite apocalyptic, just fiery scenes filled with tear gas, and that stuff is strong. I've not been in one of these scenes where it's absolutely filled with fire and smoke and tear gas, but even just a little bit of it is enough to suffocate you. I mean, it's really, really serious. So right now you have several flashpoints still in the city. These are fights. They seem to be more fights than protests in a lot of of ways. I mean, in some cases, these are protesters hunkered down and they're being attacked by the police. In other cases, you know, there's provocations going on where protesters seem to want to engage the police. But this has really entered a new phase, I think, over the past week. You know, whenever these anti-government protests started, they were large groups of demonstrations calling for democracy, democratic reforms, things like that. This is something new. These are kids who are prepared to seemingly at least spend many years in jail at minimum, if not be injured or die as a result of what they're fighting for here.
Any word on what they're planning for the rest of the week? Sounds like they're just beginning.
This is a leaderless movement. It's not clear what will be decided. There truly is no one, it seems, at the top making decisions, either in a rational way to you know, sort of de-escalate things. It seems to be whatever the students decide to do in the moment. Many of them have decided to flee for now, and then an unknown number have remained inside, Hong Kong Polytechnic University. I mean, I gotta say, the police, for the kind of things they're dealing with, it's really remarkable that no one has been killed. Really, really. I don't know how many places that would be the case.
All right, that's VOA's Bill Gallo reporting to us from Hong Kong. Pushing back against accusations from the president that the process has been stacked against him, Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, appearing on a CBS's Face the Nation, invited President Trump to testify in front of investigators in the House impeachment inquiry ahead of a week that will see several key witnesses appearing publicly.
I will make sure he does not intimidate the whistleblower. So the president could come right before the committee and speak all the truth that he wants to take the oath of office, or he could do it in writing. He has every opportunity to present his case. But it's really a sad thing. I mean, what the president did was so much worse than even what Richard Nixon did. But at some point, Richard Nixon cared about the country enough to recognize that this could not continue.
Well, in an interview on ABC's This Week, Democratic Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney said the evidence that Trump tried to trade military aid for political investigations in Ukraine is building.
What we're talking about here is that the president of the United States used taxpayer-funded military assistance to pressure a foreign leader to help him in his reelection campaign. That is solicitation of a bribe, and that is an impeachable offense listed in the Constitution.
But also on ABC's This Week, Republican Congressman Chris Stewart completely disagreed with his Democratic counterpart.
I don't think the evidence is building at all. I'm being sincere in this. I think the evidence is crumbling. I think the Democrats know they're in trouble on this.
Democrats in the House of Representatives closed the first week of public impeachment inquiry hearings into the president with testimony from Marie Yovanovitch. She is the ousted U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, who told lawmakers she was the target of a disinformation campaign orchestrated by the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, part of an irregular U.S. diplomatic channel that allegedly resulted in a holdup of nearly $400 million of U.S. aid to Ukraine. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson previews the week ahead with hearings into allegations Trump abused the power of his office.
The first week of public impeachment inquiry hearings into President Donald Trump finished.
Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give is the truth?
Ahead, an even busier schedule of witnesses in the second week. 3 days of upcoming testimony from 8 diplomatic and national security officials who will say that U.S. foreign policy in Ukraine was subverted for the president's political interests, directed by his personal lawyer.
Rudy Giuliani has made no secret of his desire to get Ukraine to open investigations into the Bidens, as well as a conspiracy theory of Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election.
Democrats allege the president fired the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine to remove an obstacle to his plans.
Our Ukraine policy has been thrown into disarray, and shady interests the world over have learned how little it takes to remove an American ambassador who does not give them what they want. After these events, what foreign official, corrupt or not, could be blamed for wondering whether the U.S. ambassador represents the president's views?
Trump tweeted about Yovanovitch as she testified, prompting a warning from Democrats about the addition of potential charges in any articles of impeachment.
This is a part of a pattern to intimidate witnesses. And it's also part of a pattern to obstruct the investigation. It was also a part, frankly, of the pattern to obstruct justice.
But the president defended the move.
I have the right to speak. I have freedom of speech, just as other people do. But they've taken away the Republicans' rights.
And as Republican allies argued, the first week of testimony provided no hard evidence of wrongdoing.
Second hearing, third witness who has no firsthand knowledge of the subject that is supposed to be the focus of this entire inquiry. Third witness who never talked to the president. Third witness who wasn't even, in Ukraine during the relevant time frame.
Upcoming witnesses will provide firsthand knowledge of Trump's phone call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the center of the impeachment inquiry, including former U.S. Ambassador to the European Union Gordon Sondland, who has already reversed his testimony to confirm Trump did condition aid to Ukraine on help investigating political rival Joe Biden and his son Hunter.
The devastating testimony corroborated evidence of bribery uncovered in the inquiry, and that the president abused power and violated his oath by threatening to withhold military aid and a White House meeting in exchange for an investigation into his political rival.
Bribery could be one of several charges in articles of impeachment the Democratic-controlled U.S. House could vote on as early as December, triggering a trial of President Trump in the Republican-majority U.S. Senate. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Iran is looking to boost exports of its red gold saffron. Thousands of protests in Lebanon as politicians trade barbs. And U.S. and South Korea postpone their joint military drills as a, quote, act of goodwill toward North Korea. Iran shuts down the internet as protests continue, while deadly anti-government protests also continue in Iraq. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The United States and South Korea have indefinitely postponed a joint military exercise, AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
We have made this decision as an act of goodwill.
At a meeting in Bangkok with his South Korean counterpart, Defense Secretary Mark Esper said the two countries decided to put off the exercises in hopes of creating space for diplomats working to get North Korea back to negotiations over its nuclear weapons program.
So I don't see this as a concession. I see this as a good faith effort by the United States and the Republic of Korea to enable peace.
But at an expanded meeting, Japan's defense minister, Taro Kono, voiced skepticism.
No one could be optimistic about North Korea.
In a tweet later, President Trump hinted another meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un could be in the works soon. Ben Thomas, Washington.
New research has found that U.S. agriculture uses child workers without proper training and care for their safety. The report, published last week in the American Journal of Industrial Medicine, says 33 children are injured every day while working on U.S. farms, and more child workers die in agriculture than in any other industry. VOA's Lotika Hoke reports that rights groups blame loopholes in U.S. laws for failing to protect child workers in agriculture.
Child labor is exploited around the world, and the United States is no exception. Children as young as 10 get hired to work on U.S. farms. They get paid less than adult workers and are pressured to produce more than is reasonable for their age, often working long hours in heat or rain. They are also exposed to pesticides and can get dehydrated without being aware of it.
When it's wet in the mornings, we wear trash bags. But throughout, like around 10 or 11, it starts getting really, really hot. So like, since the trash bags attract heat, you're like just like burning inside the trash bags, and you're just like, oh, I want to take them off.
For children working in tobacco fields, there is additional health hazard from the nicotine.
When you're on the board, you could get sick just by the smell of it.
Human Rights Watch has long pushed for a bill that would ban people younger than 18 from working in the tobacco industry.
When kids are out in the field handling those plants, whether they're harvesting, whether they're picking leaves, topping the plants, they can actually absorb that nicotine through their skin, and it makes them sick. It causes acute nicotine poisoning.
Margaret Worth, children rights researcher at Human Rights Watch, says children working in U.S. agriculture in general are not protected by law as are children working in other industries.
A loophole in our U.S. labor law means that today, in 2019, it's perfectly legal for children as young as 12 to work unlimited hours on big commercial farms, doing very hard work, and often putting their health and safety at risk in the process.
Children born on U.S. farms traditionally start helping their family with farm work as soon as they can walk.
It's an excellent way to raise your children on a farm, teach them to work.
Steve Pratt is the head of Burley Tobacco Growers, an almost a century-old co-op with members in five states. He told VOA in a telephone interview that Burley management requires its members to respect U.S. laws on child labor.
You know, our policy basically is that we support state and federal child labor laws. And we want to make sure that we're all legal, and we encourage our farmers to do that, to prevent underage children from working in hazardous occupations there.
But children's rights activists say U.S. laws for using child labor in agriculture are too lax and are pushing for more protective measures. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
Well, Nigeria's Oscar Committee is urging This is International Edition. Back in a minute.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick.
And Hadiza Kiari.
And Ayan Bior.
And Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Bandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
VOA's International Edition continues. Nigeria's Oscar Committee is urging filmmakers there to use more native languages in their productions. This after the U.S. Academy Awards disqualified a Nigerian entry into the International Feature Film category because the movie used too much English. While some in Nigeria's Hollywood, known as Nollywood, support the idea of more native languages in films, others argue that non-English films limit their audience reach. Timothy Obuizu reports from Abuja.
Nollywood filmmaker Desmond Tomwen is aiming for a U.S. Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Award, popularly known as an Oscar, by producing a film in a native Nigerian language.
It's actually an Hausa-based film. So it's a language movie, it's not English. I've done a couple of them in English, but that was actually my first film in Hausa.
Most Nigerian filmmakers make English language movies to reach a larger audience globally, but also inside Nigeria, where the former British colony made English the official language. Filmmaker Darlington Abuda has been in the industry for years.
In Nigeria, if I do a purely language-based film, I have made my film a regional film in Nigeria, so it will not appeal or get the audience traction that it needs in the other parts of the country.
But that tide may be slowly turning after the Academy Awards this month disqualified Nigeria's first entry in the International Feature Film category. Only 11 minutes of Genevieve Nnaji's Lionheart, the first Nollywood film by Netflix, was in the native Igbo language. To qualify for the International Feature Award, at least 50% of the film's dialogue must be in a language other than English. While the rejection was roundly criticized in Nigeria, CJ Obasi, a member of a Nigerian Oscar committee which was set up 5 years ago, is optimistic.
If you look at the bigger picture, you realize that it's a victory in that we made a submission for the first time ever. And what that does is that it repositions, you know, the Nigerian film industry and repositions the hearts and minds of filmmakers as to how we are going to tell our stories moving forward.
Nigeria's Oscar selection committee says the rejection should motivate Nollywood filmmakers to create more movies in the country's over 500 native languages. But convincing Nigerian filmmakers to turn away from English, the language that ties the country together and with the world, will remain a challenge. And for some Nollywood filmmakers like Jim Ike, the language used is not the point.
If someone sits in their living room and decides where my movie should be, and what platform or what award I should get, that is on them. I've done my job, I've fed the artist in me.
While Lionheart won't make the February Academy Awards, being rejected and having the backing of Netflix are already drawing more international attention to Nollywood and what Nigerian filmmakers produce next. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
This is Science in a Minute.
Neptune is so far from the gravitational pull of the Sun that it provides the dominant source of gravity for its planetary community, which includes 14 moons. New research from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory uncovered some unique choreography between two of Neptune's tiny inner moons, Naiad and Thalassa. Although their orbits are only 1,850 kilometers apart, the moons never get close enough to collide thanks to what JPL experts call a dance of avoidance. Naiad, closest to Neptune, has a tilted orbit and zigzags up and down in its orbital plane as it circles the planet. In a repeating pattern known as resonance, Naiad passes above Thalassa's orbital plane for two encounters and then passes from below on the next two meetings. This up and down motion provides about 1,000 kilometers in additional spacing distance between the two moons as they pass each other. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Billie Eilish has a new song that could very well be yet another big hit. Eilish has been teasing the new tune for weeks. Everything I Wanted is a song that is haunting and a beautiful tribute to her brother, Phineas, who she calls her best friend. She says they both imagine always being there for each other, but in the song she speaks of a traumatic dream about killing herself only to wake up and know he is still there and she is alive. The song, as with many by the musical phenomenon, is filled with emotion and clues to her real life feelings. So I stepped off the golden. Nobody cried. Nobody even noticed. I saw them standing right. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day. You're with me when you say, as long as I'm here, no one can hurt you. Don't wanna lie here, but you can learn to. If I could change the way that you see yourself, you wouldn't wonder why here. They don't deserve you. I tried to scream, but my head was underwater. They called me weak, like I'm not just somebody's daughter. It could have been a nightmare, but it felt like they were right there. And it feels like yesterday was a year ago. But I don't wanna let anybody know, 'cause everybody wants something from me. Dream. A girl.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In October, for the first time in 40 years, Iranian women were allowed into a sports stadium to watch their national team play. They were permitted to witness the soccer match against Cambodia after FIFA, the international federation governing football or soccer, pressured Iran to abide by its commitment to allow women access to international games in accordance with FIFA's anti-discrimination rules. Iran's acquiescence came after worldwide outrage at the death of Sahar Khodayari, who has come to be known as Blue Girl. She was arrested in March trying to enter Azadi Stadium in Tehran and reportedly faced a prison sentence of 6 months. In September, she committed suicide by setting herself on fire outside the courthouse. Speaking to reporters, U.S. Special Representative for Iran Brian Hook praised FIFA for its strong response to Iran's prohibition against women in stadiums, showing that when the international community pressures Iran, its behavior can change.
FIFA stood up to the regime and drove up the costs of them continuing to deny women from attending soccer games. Pressure works. It works with this regime.
Observers have noted that the regime's yielding to FIFA's demand that Iranian women be allowed to watch international soccer matches is a small step on a long and difficult continuum of Iranian women obtaining their rights. Iranian women suffer discrimination in many areas, including in the legal, employment, and domestic realms, while their defenders are subject to judicial harassment, intimidation, and imprisonment. Special Representative Hook noted the leadership role played by women in recent demonstrations in Iran.
When you look at the energy, sort of the protest movement in Iran, it's with the women around the compulsory hijab and also around the soccer.
He emphasized that the United States policy of economic and diplomatic pressure on the Iranian regime to induce it to change its behavior is aimed at Iran's leaders' pragmatic side, which he said occasionally they will put on display when they think that they're at risk. We saw that with FIFA after the organization pressured Iran. Special Representative Hook emphasized that a big pillar of what the United States is doing in its approach to Iran is standing with the Iranian people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy.